You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. There's another important conversation going on in the East Bay, a conversation about racism. Earlier this month, a police officer in South Carolina was arrested for murder after a video of him shooting an unarmed black man at a traffic stop was released. This arrest follows a year of high-profile police shootings of black men, shootings that led to protests and discussions about race in Oakland, like Black Brunch and the Black Lives Matter campaign. But in many ways, we're just joining a conversation that's been going on for a while. Oakland's Mia McKenzie has been writing about black, brown, and queer identity on her blog, Black Girl Dangerous, since 2011. She says the popular blog started out of anguish, but has gone on to give voice to queer and trans people of color. McKenzie stopped by our studios to talk with KALW's Todd Whitney about her work.
First things first, just tell me about yourself. How'd you begin writing Black Girl Dangerous?
Well, I started writing Black Girl Dangerous kind of accidentally. I was dealing with some personal issues and had this really bad relationship thing happen where I was sort of confronted with this idea ultimately of blackness as hostility, blackness as aggression, and kind of this, all the stereotypes around the angry black woman. I sort of was at a crossroads of feeling like, okay, is this just going to, am I going to have to continually make myself smaller, basically, in order to not, you know, feel threatening to white people, basically, and particularly white women. And it's super traumatizing, so I don't talk about it too much. But basically, I kind of decided that instead of being smaller because of that stereotype, I was going to just be bigger. And I was really going to own, you know, my dangerousness, this idea that I could stand up for myself and I could take up space and I could have boundaries and I could assert myself. And I was not going to let the angry black woman stereotype kind of stop me from doing that. And so I just kind of went on Tumblr and I was writing about things that I thought were important, about race and gender and queerness and stuff. And my friends started reading it and sharing it with their friends, and their friends started reading it and sharing it with their friends, and it just kind of really blew up into this thing that I never expected.
You know, last year, 2014, was like a big year for a lot of these conversations mm-hmm. about race in America. And just in general, what are your thoughts about a lot of these conversations that are taking off right now?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about them.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of conversations about race and racism, and there isn't enough action about race and racism. I think we think of race and racism as this thing that's a lot based on feelings and how do we feel about each other and what do we think about each other. And that's some of it. But what we really need to be doing is taking action against the systems of oppression, right? We sort of talk about it like, you know, these big things happen, you know, with the Mike Brown, you know, thing that sort of launched this Black Lives Matter movement in this big way. You know, that incident is such a, it's a huge thing, but it's such a small thing when you think about just the levels of systemic oppression that happen every day. When we talk about it, the ways that we talk about it, we don't always get to the crux of it and the stuff that's underneath it that allows those things to happen over and over again with impunity. And that's what we need to be doing, and that's what we need to be taking action against.
So what do you think, like, blogs like your own, like Black Girl Dangerous or any sort of blog, can sort of push us beyond that point of conversation? You know, how can blogging escape the realm of just talking about stuff and actually getting to actually mobilizing, getting something done?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's one of the challenges for not only blogging, but for, you know, any kind of media, right? Because that's what you're doing. You're having the conversation. You're having the discussion. It's not that we shouldn't be having conversations, but we need to be aware of what we're having conversations about. Are we having conversations about the laws, you know, that oppress people? Are we having conversations about the institutions that oppress people? Or is it always just these sort of interpersonal relationship things? And I also, too, think that, you know, there is a lot of organizing happening. Like, we're always talking about, you know, go here. If you're in this city, this is what's happening. Go and be a part of this. And I think that's really important, too.
Yeah, that's what's up, because I was actually following, like, a lot of the stuff that you were... I follow you on Twitter.
Okay.
And I was, like, checking out a lot of the stuff you were you had going on back in mid-November with everything popping off with Eric Garner and Mike Brown
right.
and stuff like that.
Right.
So I'm here talking with Mia McKenzie, the founder of Black Girl Dangerous. Do you think there's any sort of risk of an echo effect, potentially creating, like, an echo chamber amongst people, like-minded people, only talking to themselves?
Well, no. I mean, A, I'm for an echo chamber. I think echo chambers are highly underrated when you're talking about radical conversation, when you're talking about oppressed people. You know, and I don't think that all marginalized people necessarily have, I mean, I know that we don't all have the same ideas, right? So even if we're talking to each other, it doesn't mean that we're all in agreement. It doesn't mean that we're all bringing the same things to the table. And like I said, depending on what your particular identity is, your experience can be vastly different from someone else's, and you can both still be queer and trans people of color, right? And so, I mean, we have such a wealth and such a diversity of experiences just within that group of queer and trans people of color. So I think, you know, so I don't think that we're sort of just like telling each other everything that we already know. In fact, we're not at all. Like, we're bringing new ideas to each other. We're giving each other new frameworks to think about how to create solidarity. And all that said, I also think that, you know, when you live in a world where you never get to have a voice, where you're always the one who isn't heard, it's nice to get together with people who, you know, share some of your identity and like talk really seriously and radically about change, you know, and about how to fight oppression. I think the idea of the echo chamber is usually this idea that, oh, but you have to have everyone's perspective. You know, you have to listen to everyone. And I don't think that you do. I don't, you know, in an ideal world where we're all, you know, already coming from the same sort of level of being heard, right? All things being equal, when everybody has, you know, everybody has the same platforms, everybody has the same, you know, access, then sure, great. Everybody have an opinion, please weigh in. But that's not reality. The reality is that some of us never get heard. Some of us never get to have a voice. And so just making space for those of us who don't to finally have that, just us, is, I think, radical and amazing. And that's, you know, important to me to be doing that.
How has social media and the internet made a lot of this possible, what you're just talking about, this experience of sharing the nuances of even just being a black person or being a person of color or a queer person? How has the internet, social media allowed this stuff to happen?
Well, it has a lot. I think, you know, one thing, you know, social media has been around for a while now, Facebook and Twitter in particular, which are the sort of the biggies. And I was really struck back in August last year when Mike Brown was killed. You know, that story broke on Twitter. You know, I mean, literally, I remember being on Twitter and there was, saw a retweet of a guy who had seen what had happened, who literally was tweeting like, oh my God, I just saw this thing that just happened. And then people retweeted that. And then, you know, and other people who were there started tweeting. And it was just like this huge thing that broke. And it was days before anybody, you know, in mainstream, you know, journalism even cared to, you know, say anything about it. And it became this huge thing. That movement started because people had access to Twitter, you know, and were able to like put out, you know, I mean, even like pictures like this guy and this is what just happened. And so that's been hugely important for just getting these stories out there. And since then, there's been so many of those same sorts of stories that just nobody would know about if people weren't talking about them on Twitter. As great as Twitter and, you know, Facebook and these things are for you know, all the great things that we've been able to do, the truth is that, you know, these things, they're owned by corporations. And, you know, we can't trust corporations to, you know, you know, have our backs, you know, in the struggle, frankly.